Despite his daily ministrations, Anna Wetherill remained entirely ignorant of the fact that the hotelier loved her with the passion of a lonely and desperate heart. She was courteous to him, and kept her rooms in decent order, but she never solicited his company, and she restricted their conversation to the most trivial of themes. Needless to say, her indifference only warmed the coals of the man's infatuation, and banked them higher, so that they burned longer and with a redder light. When Mannering suggested after a month that the extravagance of Anna's weekly bath ought to be discontinued, Clinch only ceased to itemize this service on Anna's monthly bill. Every Sunday he set out the copper tub and laid out the linens and drew the water as before. It seemed in those first few months that nothing at all could dampen Clinch's adoration for Anna. He was not repelled by the fact of her profession, though it did distress him to know that she was so frequently in danger of harm. When he learned that she was an opium eater and took the drug nearly every day, he was likewise only grieved and fearful rather than repulsed. He reasoned that the drug was very fashionable, and that he himself took laudanum whenever he could not sleep. Why, what was the difference between opium that had been turned into a tincture and opium that had been burned into a smoke? The sorrier aspects of Anna's life, far from driving Clinch away, only caused him sadness, and as a consequence, he longed for her happiness all the more. When it became apparent that Anna was expecting another man's child, however, Clinch's sadness acquired an edge of alarm. He began to wonder whether he ought now to make his feelings known to her. Perhaps he should make an offer of marriage. Perhaps, when the babe was born, he might adopt the little thing as his own and care for it. Perhaps they could become a family of a kind. Clinch was pondering this very question one midwinter afternoon when he heard a thud upon the hotel's veranda and a muted cry. He opened the sash window. He had been lighting the fires in the upstairs rooms, and peered down to see that Anna had stumbled on the short flight of stairs that led to the front door. As he watched, she lifted her arm, slowly, and began to cast about for the rail. Clinch descended the stairs, crossed the foyer, and opened the door to admit her, in which time Anna had hauled herself upright and crossed the veranda. When Clinch stepped out, Anna, who had been upon the point of reaching for the latch herself, fell against him, and to stop herself from falling she reached up and wrapped her heavy arms around his neck. She turned her face into his collar so that her nose and mouth were pressed against the skin of his throat. She seemed to sag against him. Clinch gave a murmur of surprise, and then he was very still. He felt that if he spoke or moved too quickly, the moment might be shattered, and the whore might flee. He looked out over her shoulder. It was a pale, bright Sunday afternoon, and the street was quiet. No one could see them. No one was watching. Clinch cupped Anna's waist between his palms, and breathed again, and then in one swift movement he folded Anna against him, lifted her up, and crushed his mouth against her cheek. He stayed there for a long moment, his lips against her jaw. Then he hoisted her higher, retreated back into the foyer, shut the door with the edge of his foot, turned the key in the lock, and carried her upstairs. Anna's bath had been set out in the room opposite the landing, and iron pots of water were waiting, covered, on the ledge beside the fire. Clinch, still with Anna in his arms, lowered himself down upon the sofa next to the bath. His heart was beating very fast. He drew back to look at her. Her eyes were closed. Her limbs were loose and syrupy. Many months had passed since Anna had returned the rented purple dress to Dick Mannering, having purchased in place of it several dresses that were better suited to her frame. Today, however, she was not wearing the bustled orange gown with which she habitually advertised her trade, for the whores in Hokitika wore bright colours when they were working and muted tones when they were not. She was dressed instead in a cream-coloured muslin frock, the bust of which was cut in the style of a riding jacket and buttoned to her throat. Around her shoulders she wore a blue three-cornered shawl. From these clues, and from the fact that she was all but insensible from the effects of opium, Edgar Clinch deduced that she had just been in Chinatown. When she travelled to that place, she travelled incognito in her dull-coloured clothes. With shaking fingers, Clinch eased the shawl from Anna's shoulders and let it fall upon the floor. He then untied the bow at the back of her dress and loosed the strings of her corset, moving slowly and in stages. His fingers found her covered buttons, one by one, and unhooked the loops that secured them. She was compliant in his arms, and when he moved to ease the dress off her shoulders, she lifted her arms like a very small child. Next, he detached her crinoline and lifted her out of the uppermost hoop so that the frame fell away, hitting the floor in a rattle of buckles and wood. He eased her down upon the sofa again. She was now undressed to her slip, and folded her shawl over her body. Then he stood and began to fill the bath. She lay with her cheek against the back of her hand, her breast rising and falling with the fitful breath of sleep. When the water was ready, Clinch returned to her, murmuring phrases of reassurance. He drew her slip over her head, gathered her naked body up, knelt, and lowered her into the tub. Anna made a cooing noise when her body touched the water, but she did not open her eyes. Clinch arranged her so that the copper lip of the tub sat snug against the nape of her neck, ensuring that she could not slither down and drown herself. He smoothed her hair from her cheek and ran his thumb around her jaw. He had wet his sleeves up to the shoulders in lowering her into the water. Now he stood back and held his dripping sleeves apart from his body and looked down at her. He felt very lonely and very contented at once. After a moment, the hotelier knelt and picked up the muslin dress from the ground, meaning to shake it straight and fold it over the back of the sofa. The dress was heavier than he would have imagined. Why, it was only muslin and thread, now that the crinoline had been detached and the bloomers and petticoats discarded. Why was the thing so very burdensome? He pinched the fabric, and as he did so, felt something strange beneath his hands. He turned the dress over. What was that, some kind of weight, spaced along the seam? It felt like a row of stones. He eased his finger beneath a thread and felt it snap, then wormed his finger and thumb into the tunnel of the hem. Perhaps it had been stuffed with something. He withdrew, to his astonishment, a pinch of pure gold. Anna was still sleeping, her cheek against the lip of the bath. Clinch, his heartbeat racing, felt along the seams of the gown and up the flounces to the bust. There were ounces and ounces, perhaps pounds, concealed within the fabric, and all of it pure. What had Anna been doing in Chinatown to return half-addled with opium, her dress stitched up with